Hello, my friends. This is episode 84 of Exit the Drinking Life podcast. In today's episode, I'm going on a very different route. This happens to be January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And so in this episode, I am interviewing an amazing woman who shared with me all kinds of information around human trafficking that I was totally unaware of at a recent chamber event. And so she agreed to come on to be a part of our show and help us to bring in more awareness, to help us to prevent human trafficking. And this was very near and dear to my heart because we were taught about this all along our journey as flight attendants each and every year. We learn stuff around human trafficking and how to help prevent it. And it is a very real issue. And some of the information you're about to find out in this episode, in this conversation we're having, could be very shocking. And it won't be for little ones to hear, right? So if you do have little ones around while you're listening to this particular episode, put on your earbuds. But it is also very vital and important. This information is one of those topics that not talking about it won't make it go away. And so I really wanted to bring in the knowledge and the resources to help you have some more awareness about it and to be a part of helping prevent this. So I look forward to hearing your feedback. Please do share it with me on this episode, and we'll go ahead and dive right into the episode. Welcome to Exit the Drinking Life podcast. I'm thrilled that you're here. I'm your host, Debbie Tauber, creator of the Exit Methodology, advocate for living your best and most intentional life, and alcohol freedom coach. This podcast is for you if you have big dreams and aspirations, but you begin to notice that just maybe your current drinking patterns are getting in the way. Inside the podcast, we'll dive into a modern day approach that can help you move away from shame and blame when it comes to what you're drinking and finally take the driver's seat of your life again. It's time to exit the drinking life. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I am thrilled to have you guys here today. I say that every time, and I'm always thrilled to be here with you guys and honored and blessed that you allow me to be a part of your day and allow me in between your ears and in your earbuds. Today, I have a very different topic. I am bringing forth the topic of human trafficking, and I'm choosing to bring this topic forward on this podcast because this is, first of all, this month that this is going live and that we're going to air this, it is Human Trafficking Awareness Month and Human Trafficking Prevention, actually, month. And so I want to bring this topic forward, and also because the impact that this type of thing happens to people's lives and how alcohol can become involved in people's life because of this type of a traumatic event to people. And so I feel like it does fit. And then I'm also bringing it because of how shocked and amazed I was about the information that we're going to learn here, even though my flight attendant world and my flight attendant realm, we were trained every year around human trafficking. But some of the things that I learned where I met our guest today totally shocked me. And this is why I wanted to bring her onto the podcast and have her share this, because the more we can destigmatize this topic, as well as our topic, right, drinking less and exiting that kind of life, the more we're going to be able to help more people out there in the world that may be impacted by this. So the guest I have, her name is Kat, and she'll tell you her whole entire name, but I call her Kat, and I met her at the Chamber of Commerce. I am an ambassador for the Chamber of Commerce here in the West Palm Beaches, and she came and did a presentation for one of our groups, and I was literally shocked and amazed at the information that she told me and the fact of around the community kids, which we're going to go into that and help you learn what that is. So before we get into that, though, I wanted to introduce herself, give you a little bit about her background, and then we're going to give you some insight on the two types of human trafficking that actually takes place and some signs that you can recognize and what you might be able to do about it. And that's kind of how we feel like. And also to bring this conversation out into the world so we can begin and be a part of destigmatizing this conversation. So before we go into that exactly, I'm going to let Kat introduce herself, and then we will start with giving you this knowledge and this information. So Kat, go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yes. Thank you, Debbie, so much for having me today. Yes. So my name is Kat Paterno, or Catherine Paterno. I've been working in mental health, behavioral health here in the state of Florida for the last 5 years. I've worked with numerous behavioral agencies, as well as the largest child behavioral health hospital in the state of Florida. And I have been focusing majority of my education and my career around sexual assault and human trafficking cases specifically. And I've had the privilege to working with some of these victims that kind of got this train started for me. I really became very much invested the more and more that I got to work with them. I have a degree in child advocacy and policy, and I'm getting my master's in legal and forensic psychology so I can continue doing the work with these victims and survivors, really. That's what they should be called, survivors, and trying to create more survivors in this world. So thank you so much for having me. And I cannot wait to let you all know all the wonderful things and how we can start making some change.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate your willingness to be here, to be able to at least open up this conversation and share in a very different space some of this information. And so what I want to uncover first is, what are the two types of trafficking that you talked about? Where the victims are actually located and where they're found.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a two-part question. So we normally think of human trafficking as international, right? The movie Taken, right away, that's what we think of. And that these kids are abducted right away and locked in cages or homes. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, that does happen. There is a percentage of our victims of human trafficking that are abducted and that are coming from international areas. However, we have an overabundance, actually a very high percentage of domestic children here in the U.S. that are being trafficked. And a lot of our children are on two forms. So they can be within, custody or wards of the state, if you will. And that's another part where everyone thinks, oh, they must be just, they don't have family. The big misconception, we actually have quite a few children who are community children, which is what we call them, but they have homes, they have families, they have siblings, they have a bedroom, they go to school every single day, but yet they have a hidden secret. And that hidden secret is that they are being trafficked, that they're being solicited by grown adults who are taking advantage of them. And these kids go home at night. These kids go to school. We see them on a daily basis. It could be a neighbor. It could be somebody your child goes to school with. And those are the ones that are kind of getting lost in the shuffle because it's not really in your face. So yeah, those are the two types of children that we see normally in this country. It's mostly domestic and it's community-based children. It does not have to be custody or wards of the state.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that there are children, yes, but they could be even abducted domestically, right? They are abducted mm-hmm. in some way and they aren't able to leave and go back to their own home, right? But then Absolutely. Also, in addition to that, being domestically and abducted some way and held captive, so to speak, is how we mostly think of it. And yes, we do also think of it as being like, oh, but they came from like another country. Not necessarily our country. Yep. So that's happening in our own country. And yes, some of the children are abducted and locked away and don't really have access. They're always under control somehow. But yet then there's also others, a percentage of them, that are literally going back to their own homes, going back and sleeping in their own beds every single night, going to school every day, yet the loved ones around them, the school and the people around them have no idea that they are being trafficked.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And there's a lot of things that take into play for that. So it's it's hard to stomach a lot of the time.
Yes, that's what got me. I was totally, because I was under the impression that it were kids that were always abducted in some way. I knew it was also domestically, but I had no idea. I was just totally shocked that it would also be kids that would be going home to their own home, sleeping in their own beds every night and going to school. Mm-hmm. And yet they would be living this horrible secret life of being forced and made to do things that they actually, that they did not want to do, and trafficked. And so what I want to help people is recognize, how can they recognize some of the signs that this may be happening to a child that they know?
Yeah. So children who are kind of at risk, right? And how you can kind of recognize some of those signs is over access of internet. Now, this day and age, we have so much internet access, right? And our children have internet access right away at their fingertips. Some of them have iPhones that cost as much as my rent, right, Debbie? So they sit yes. there and they have all access to all these technologies that make it very hard for us to monitor as parents and as adults. But we have to recognize the use of how much they're going to use their phones and what apps they're using. And so those are things that parents should be recognizing and being very diligent to having conversations with or just be aware of. Another sign is behavior in or change in behavior with either parents or school or teachers. So typically you have a child who, you know, is a normal child, right? Has some issues, but nothing major, is developmentally age appropriately having arguments with their parents. But say that shifts, they become aloof or extremely argumentative. Those are signs that some sort of trauma could be happening. What that trauma is, isn't necessarily identified. We're not going to say that's got to be human trafficking, but we can recognize the fact that they must be experiencing some trauma because their behavior has shifted. Something has changed. Either their grades are slipping, they're not attending school as often, right? All of a sudden, the child who went to school every single day has missed a couple days. You know, little things that maybe a teacher hasn't really taken a note of, hasn't really spotted. And probably should, but is like, oh, they're just being kids. Those things are some signs that maybe something else is going on. When a child, and usually human trafficking, the percentage for women or females, even female children, is a lot higher than males. And that's just what the statistics are showing. That doesn't necessarily mean that males aren't getting abducted or trafficked in any way. But for this purpose, the desire to have male attention or acceptance. When we start to see our little girls or our teenage girls shift, there's one thing that's age appropriate, and it's another one that it's a little kind of alarming, right? Where you're like, why are they doing that? That doesn't seem right. So the desire, the need for all of that. Seek independence. Again, these are hard to identify only because you're sitting there and you're like, well, my teenage child wants tons of independence. They're not going to get it, but they want tons of independence. There's a fight with that independence. So it goes in, back into play with their parents, right? The argumentative with their parents. All of a sudden, they need all this independence rather than it gradually happening. Child starts to become, you know, insecure. This is also a child that can be at risk of being trafficked. Child who's extremely insecure, has very low self-esteem issues, they're at higher risk of being trafficked. So these are also signs that parents can, you know, make sure that they're instilling self-esteem, proper self-esteem and things like that, so that they can avoid their child being a target to a perpetrator. And then explores boundaries and takes risks. When you have a child that all of a sudden starts taking tons of risks, so another red flag. Another one is all of a sudden they come home with a bunch of really expensive things, but your 16-year-old does not hold a job and doesn't hold a job to get their nails done every single week. I am the 35-year-old grown adult, and I can't even get all the nice things that sometimes these children are walking around with. These are red flags. These are signs that maybe somebody else is giving them these gifts for services to keep them around. another sign or child who would be at risk is some sort of substance dependency or drug abuse. Those are very high signs of children who could be at risk or who have been starting to be trafficked. If they weren't really drinking before, but now you're seeing them consistently getting drunk or taking part in smoking weed or any other drugs, signs of trauma. So it's our job as parents to figure out what kind of trauma, what is going on? Why is my child changed? Is somebody hurting them? Are they getting, it could be a whole slew of things. But human trafficking is always the last thing on everyone's mind. They don't think that their child is being human trafficked. They don't think their child is being taken advantage like that. They go straight to being bullied and or some other form. They don't go to sexual assault. They don't go to human trafficking because we constantly think, not my kid. It won't happen to me. It's not going to happen to my family. But it does. It's very prominent.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So that would be your last thing that you would want to ask yourself, because that's really not the thing that a parent wants to have to face, that this would be a thing that happens to my child. But I also think that this having the conversation and bringing in the awareness that it could be a possibility because of the fact that the children are going into their own homes. And you would not, that would, so of course, I also think that because they're coming home would also be you wouldn't really think, well, it has to be human trafficking because they're not,
right?
Because they're coming home, right? And so,
right.
So what I just kind of want to recap on some of the things that you said. So some of the kids that may be at higher risk, and I also want to point out that we're not saying this is definitely it. We are just wanting to have conversation around it and clue you in to, yes, this could also be a possibility of what's happening besides other things that you may have thought of first, right? And so the high access to the internet, so to pay attention to the apps that they're using, and even to pay more attention to how often they're actually accessing the internet even, and where they're getting access and those kinds of things. And then also a child's self-esteem, if it is low or it starts to be changed, those could be kind of higher at-risk kids with the high access to the internet and then also a lower sort of self-esteem. So those might be some things that would put a child at higher risk. What a parent might want to look for is be on the lookout for is literally a change in behavior, but like more of a drastic shift change in behavior, not just the slight gradual change in behavior that our children gradually get as they're also wanting to find their own independence, but a dramatic change in it. And then also for the female child, if they are seeking out what you as a parent is viewing as extreme inappropriate behavior for a child of their age, right? It's one thing where they start to want to have boyfriends and that kind of a nature, but if it comes to like something where in your gut you're kind of like, oh, but that just seems even a little extreme for even wanting to start this behavior, that kind of a thing. And then the hard fighting for tons of independence at one time, not just a gradual where, oh, but I want to stay up later, or I want to go to the movies without you dropping me off, kind of gradual, slowly build up to this independence that they have. And then if you start to notice a child is taking tons of risk, high risk things, that might be a clue that something's happening. And if they're coming home with expensive things and you're 100% aware they have no way of paying for these expensive things, so where would they be coming from? And also substance dependence coming into the picture. So did I kind of cover most of the things that you kind of talked about?
Yeah, you definitely did. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Kids that are at risk and things to look out for. Those are, they kind of go hand in hand, if you will. It can go both ways. So absolutely.
Okay. And so if a parent is kind of now noticing some of this stuff might be happening, where can they go? A parent might not even know where to go or who to reach out to because I don't think we also, that they also want to jump to, oh my gosh, it's human trafficking right away either. So where could they go? Where could they start the process of getting support for their child?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's so many agencies that here in the state of Florida that can help with just even having a conversation. But really, it should start at home. Have a conversation. We cannot be afraid to have conversations with our kids, right? They don't want to talk to us all the time. They think that we're uncool and that we don't understand and all those things, right? But we need to make them feel safe and secure at home. If we're feeling as though something's going on, and it, like I said and Debbie said, if we don't want to jump to conclusion that right away it must be human trafficking, but something's going on, right? Their behavior has shifted. So either way, you as a parent want to get to the bottom of it. You want to figure out, what is making my kid change? So having that conversation at home, it starts there. And it starts with getting them to start to feel comfortable with having conversations with you, having those hard discussions. And then if it's still continuing, there are agencies like Catholic Charities or Polaris Services. And then if you're really suspecting, there's the hotline. And you can have a conversation with them. You can talk to them and be like, I'm not really sure what's going on. These are the signs that I'm seeing. This is what I'm kind of concerned about. And they will walk you through it. They will have a conversation with you. They'll tell you what else to look out for. They'll make note of these things and work with you to try and get help for you and your family.
Okay, so where is this hotline? Is there a number? A number for the hotline?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So the Florida Abuse Hotline for Human Trafficking is 1-800-962-2873. And you can also text HELP if you are being trafficked or you know somebody that's being trafficked and there's not one question about it. You can text HELP to 233-733. And then you can also call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. And that number is 1-888-373-7888. So easy numbers. A lot of threes and sevens and eights.
Okay. All right. So let me recap it. So, and then I'm also going to put this inside the show notes for this episode. So they'll be inside there written for those of you listening. If this is something you want to write down the numbers or screen capture even the numbers as you're listening, whatever, however it is you listen on it, it'll be inside the notes. But the Florida number is 800-962-2873.
That's correct.
Text HELP to 233-733.
That's correct.
And then the national number is 888-373-7888.
That is also correct.
Okay. All right. So now we've kind of, and I don't want to scare people to death either, even though I was really like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening to kids. Like when I first heard the conversation, the insight around, especially around the community kids. And I don't want to dismiss the other kids either. It's very traumatic, the whole experience for anyone this may or may not be happening to, right? And so, but I also want to encourage you that I get, because the conversations I have a lot with people as I'm coaching them is there's a lot of fear around going and doing and being new things and simply from just choosing to have something in your glass other than alcohol. So I get that it would feel very, very hard. And I remember raising my own kids as teenagers that, yes, some of those conversations felt very uncomfortable to me as the parent. But what I want you to also understand is that is far less uncomfortable than if you have to, God forbid, face this situation. Then you are in extreme discomfort. And so allowing yourself to even be afraid to have the conversation with your kids and even letting them know, listen, I am no more comfortable with having this conversation with you than you are of having it with me. But I'm willing to have it because I care about you and I want you to be safe. And I am willing to face this discomfort. And I get that maybe if some of the things I'm bringing up, maybe they're happening and you're afraid to tell me. And I want you to, you know, trust that it's not your fault. I'm not mad at you. This is whatever has happened, even if it's against whatever we taught you, I'm not mad at you because it's not your fault. You aren't the person in the wrong here. And so I think that's really what parents want to, you know, help them understand is they're absolutely not in the wrong here. Even if they went and did some of the things that they never want to share with you as a parent, or they bring home the expensive items and things start to show up. And maybe even their anger and their frustration is because they don't like what they're doing either. You are their safest space. They cannot be angry with whoever it is that is doing this to them. You are the one that's safe to be that angry with. And that is why they're absolutely being that angry with you. And it's not because they don't love you. It's because they have nowhere else to take out their anger on.
Are the ripple effects of your current relationship with alcohol taking more from your life than you'd like? What's your plan for getting the support you need to stop the negative impact? And more importantly, is the plan based around a modern-day approach to behavior changes? My programs are based upon current research instead of concepts created in 1935. As your intentional living and alcohol freedom coach, I offer you modern-day tools to help you transform your relationship with alcohol without labels, judgment, or making a forever decision. In my programs, you decide where, when, and how much alcohol fits into the life you want to live. Private coaching allows you the space and freedom to be your unique self while taking ownership of your choices. Ready to start the conversation around private coaching? Head over to jumpseatcoaching.com/breakthrough. That's jumpseatcoaching.com/breakthrough, all as one word, breakthrough as one word, no spaces.
Yeah, a lot of the times our kids just don't know how to direct their anger, their frustration, their sadness. They're feeling all these really big emotions in a body that they have yet to figure out. And so it's our job to have those hard conversations, even though they are the most uncomfortable conversations to have. Believe me, I know I've had them. I've worked with many, like I said, victims and now survivors of human trafficking. And it is still, to this day, one of the hardest conversations to have with them. But the repercussions of not having it is way too much of a risk. They're more at risk of developing depression or anxiety disorders, multiple trust issues if they continue into this type of world, not to mention medical issues such as STDs. They're already feeling tons of shame and self-worth issues. So it's our job to continue to have these conversations and to talk to them so we're not making matters worse for them. Let's give them the outlet to be able to speak, even though it makes us uncomfortable. It's probably more uncomfortable for them. And they do feel a sense of shame when they're doing it. They didn't wake up one day and say, let me go get trafficked. Let me be used by an individual. This is something that developed. A lot of the perpetrators or pimps, if you will, they're really good at boyfriending and making the victim feel secure at first, building that trust. I say all the time, if they were car salesmen, we would all be driving lemons because they would probably sell us the worst car on the lot, but make it seem like it was the best thing on our product for us. And we needed that right away. They are very good at getting inside someone's head and manipulating it to make us feel like this is something we want. This is something we're choosing to do, that they're not doing it to us. So it's very confusing for a lot of these children. So it's our job to try and keep that dialogue going, make sure that our kids know that we are a safe place, that they can talk to us, even if the conversation is super uncomfortable for them. So yeah, I completely agree. We as adults have to keep drilling into our kids' heads that we are safe, that it is uncomfortable, but we don't have to go down certain roads because we can have that conversation. We can trust each other.
And so as this, where you were describing how they're very good at making you think, oh, and P.S., this is actually something you want to do when it's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was, the word that was coming to me as you were describing that was like grooming. So this is how they're grooming. Uh-huh. So what are some of the ways, so as you're having these harder conversations, like even bringing up the conversation that it's this very possibility that children do get trafficked, like, right? Like, just like we don't as parents want to have this conversation around sex, but we know our kids are kids, their hormones are coming. We need to have this conversation around sex. So I also think it's this conversation around these kinds of things that may happen, that do happen in the world. So what are some of the grooming techniques that they actually use that maybe you could have this conversation around with your kids?
I love this question because it actually starts with when a child doesn't have an open conversation or open relationship with their parent. That is how a lot of these kids get trapped. That is the number one thing. So we actually can combat a grooming technique or a manipulation from another adult if we make our child feel that they are secure with us. When we either, the child doesn't have a relationship with their parent, there is no open dialogue, they're constantly arguing with each other, that is an in for a lot of these perpetrators. They read that, they know it, they see it. And they take that and they run. And they build that wall up so high with them and your child on one side and you on the other, and you'd have no idea what's even happening. So it actually starts, that grooming, that type of conversation starts with us. Giving them the ability to have that conversation with us eliminates the number one factor. It eliminates the technique that they use, that your parents don't care about you, that you can't talk to them. So you always fight with them. They don't care what you're doing. They don't care if you get hurt or you get sick. I care, though. I care about you. The second we put that wall, we stop that by having conversations with our child and letting them know, mommy and daddy love you. And no matter what happens, we are always going to love you and we're always going to be there for you. And, you know, we are going to want to talk about everything. The moment you start creating that open dialogue, you have deflated what a perpetrator is capable of doing. And that is getting inside your child's head and making them feel as though they aren't part of your family union, that you don't care. So that the number one thing right there is just having that conversation. And then from there, say there is a perpetrator, there is a person that is getting inside your child's head. Some of those techniques would be, you know, boyfriending. So finding somebody somewhat around their age and becoming their boyfriend or claiming that they're their boyfriend and are a little bit more controlling. So letting our children know what a healthy relationship is and that controlling somebody isn't a healthy relationship and the signs of what that looks like so that they can recognize and be like, well, I don't really, and this is good across the board, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be with just human trafficking. It's a good thing to know, but letting them realize that I'm better than being controlled by another individual. They might use drugs and alcohol, having that open dialogue with your child about alcohol and drug use and what that looks like, and being open and honest with them. We all know children try things, right? We all know they go about trying something at a party. And it's not to shame them right away, but to have that conversation with them, be like, okay, you tried it. Well, we're having a conversation about it though. You don't get off the hook just because you tried it. We are having a conversation, you know, and not shaming a child necessarily for their choice of trying things. We all experiment with things, but always having that open conversation, no matter how difficult it is. And sometimes checking ourselves at the door as adults and being like, okay, I have to do this. Let me take 10 deep breaths. I am going to breathe through it. If you don't have an answer to their question, you don't make something up. You say, you know what? Let's look at that up together. Let's look what that does to you together. How does this happen? Where would you find this? Doing it with your child is creating that relationship between the two of you and building that trust. So those are some things I would say for parents to do in when they decide to have these types of conversations around sex or, relationships. And the fear of somebody taking advantage of them or their child in a human trafficking sense.
Okay. That's awesome. And I also think too, for parents, even though, especially as, well, I think it's really all along, because I noticed a big difference in just even generationally, like how I was raised and then, because I'm in my 60s, right? And so then now how I see based on knowledge of how human behavior actually is, right? And so then how the guidance towards parenting is shifting to where, yes, you have your boundaries and you have what's expected of a child in your home, but it is not done from the space of, and PS is always because I'm the boss. It's from this kind of nurturing together and building together this form of a relationship with each other. And this is, so it's really very different than I'm not sure I can explain it. I'm trying to explain it, but not really bullying.
No, you're absolutely right.
Just because I said so kind of thing, right?
Right, and because I said.
Right.
I yeah, so it's all literally the time, that. Because I said so.
Right, because I said so, where, yes, you are the one in the house and you are the parent, right? And you have all the boundaries, but having the more of a conversation around it and not just leaving it at, because I said so kind of thing, absolutely, is what is going to help with the dialogue opening up. And it can be even, okay, I heard your side and we're still going to do it my way because this is my boundary, but yet you allowed them to have their side. So where if they can feel like they can come to conversations and have a side, then is where you have the space for the open dialogue. And I get that this is a skill to learn and it might be new and different. And so it might even mean maybe yourself, I don't know, getting a coach even to how to coach and to parent to have open dialogues, right? And it's not really about making your parenting style wrong, just opening up to the possibility of a style of parenting that isn't just because I'm the boss and I said so type of parenting.
Absolutely. And there are tons of services. Yeah, no, there's tons of services for that. You know, and you bring up a good point, Debbie. You know, times have changed in parenting, right? We've seen it generationally. We've seen how parenting has kind of shifted. Parenting now kind of has to shift again. And the reason for that is that the internet is so big and there's so many options and there's the app for this and an app for that. And children have iPhones and I don't want to harp back on to that, but that is where everything is digital now. A lot of our trafficking situations is happening from their phone. They don't have to be out playing. So our parenting style then has to change, right? So we have to be more, there is something to say about, because I said so. But like you said, it's going back and saying, okay, because I said so, do you know why I said? Like, wait like an hour while they're sitting in the room contemplating, why couldn't I go to Jenny's house? Because I said so. Well, then have the conversation afterwards. Have that dialogue. Get them to understand. Because otherwise they're relying on somebody on the other side of that phone. Just because you said that they can't go somewhere and they have to sit in the room doesn't mean that they don't have access to something else.
Yeah. Just like they have access to, especially if they still have their phone while they're in the room, right? They have access to communicating with somebody else. So even though they didn't get, like in your example, even though they didn't go to somebody's house, they still were possibly engaging with someone else. So
absolutely.
And I think that you're right. You really need to open up and explore this, like this fine line between the boundaries, but yet also developing this. And here is the reasons why. And gradually and eventually you will understand them. But always keeping the dialogue, because if you just end it at because I said so, then they're not going to come to you. And they're not going to have a more open dialogue communication process with you. And I'm not saying I have all the answers, and I'm not saying that it would be easy if I was parenting again, learning how to figure that out. I'm sort of, in a way, learning it because I have grandkids now. And so when they come and they're with me, I'm catching myself, like, paying attention to where, oh, I can't just use that because I said so. I need to get this going around the, like, you know. So I'm really catching myself and opening myself up to, how often am I thinking my next sentence should be because I said so, when it's more where it needs to be a little bit of a different kind of a dialogue. I mean, they're not yet at the age where they have the phones and stuff like that, but, you know, and according to my daughter,
it's good practice to start now.
Well, and according to my daughter, she's going to be the parent where the kids are going to totally dislike her because they aren't going to get a phone. And I'm like, yes, go for you. Like, I don't know how well that's going to play out, but that's what she says right now. But anyway.
I tell people that all the time. Whenever my friends or family call me like, how, when should I give my child the phone? I said, wait as long as you possibly can before you give them a phone. And if you feel so inclined to do it because there are societal pressures, right? You better be monitoring that phone and making sure that they don't have access to certain things. It shuts off, because we have the capability of shutting the phone off from an app. Now, I can shut off my niece's and nephew's phone if I wanted to from an app. They don't get access if I don't want them to. So we need to, as parents, to, here are the boundaries. This is the rules. This is what we're going to discuss. What works for you and what's going to work for me? What are hard no's? And then being able to have a discussion about it. And that is a very hard thing to learn, right? We did not all grow up that way. And I don't expect this to be an easy thing whatsoever. What I hope to do for people is to continue to encourage them to have those hard conversations, to encourage them to speak about the things that maybe nobody spoke to them about, but they kind of wish they did. There's been many times I did not grow up in a household where sex was discussed. But I know for myself, when I have children, that will be a conversation. I know for my sister, it was never discussed with her either. And my niece, who is 5 years old, you know, we're teaching them proper words for her body parts, not using, you know, cute words, using the proper terminology, so that if anything is ever to happen to her, we are giving her the proper language. And so those are important things, is that way of communicating with our kids. And it starts with communication. It starts with relationship building. So we don't have children who have low self-esteem and then are taken advantage of by people in general. It doesn't have to be just with human trafficking in general. But human trafficking, since we're talking about that today, because it is Human Trafficking Awareness Month.
That is
a huge proponent. It's a huge proponent for a lot of these kids. It is a huge thing for a lot of the pimps to take advantage of, is the lack of relationship that they have with their families. They hold on to that.
Right. And I think that's what gives them their, I don't know, the trafficker, the groomer, their superpower. So really your kryptonite can be keeping the conversation open with your kids. And, you know, kind of, that's how you can figure out how you can be the kryptonite. And I think the perfect way and the perfect step is what you said. When you said, have those conversations that when you were growing up, as you became an adult, you started to realize you wished you'd had those conversations, that someone had those conversations with you. So that's the perfect place for you to start as a parent. What were those things that, oh, I wished somebody, some adult had told me this when you were facing that circumstance as you were growing, as you're becoming a teen growing, right? So literally start there. Let those be the conversations that you have. And I also get that the world too is, maybe you didn't grow up with the cell phone in your hand, depending on how old your kids were, right? Where, like, even my own children, mine, they're in their 30s and 40s, they didn't grow up with the cell phone in their hand. But now they're having kids that's what they're going to want. And so now you're having to now be the person to navigate figuring this out, right? You know, so it's really taking it about, like, really becoming very curious about, well, what do I wish I would have known, or what could have possibly, you know, think about a circumstance that you may have faced as a child And what would I have liked to have known? And let me start there with this conversation. And then I do want to ask one more thing, and then we'll kind of wrap it up.
Yeah.
But are these groomers and these people doing this, are they all men?
No.
Okay. They I didn't think so, men. But that's why I wanted to bring that up, because we haven't talked about that part yet.
So typically we think men, right? We think of a perpetrator or a pimp, somebody who sexually assaults somebody, as man. That mm-hmm. is not the case. They are not just men. We have women perpetrators. We have women who groom. A lot of the times, though, a lot of these women, they've been in the life for a long time. And so somehow along the way, they kind of stayed in it. And now they are perpetrating. That's a lot of how it is. Not always the case. Sometimes we just have a random woman who's just like, all right, I'm going to start preying on children. But a lot of the times these women have grown up in this life. They were victims of human trafficking in their life, and they were used originally when they became a little too old to actually take part in the act. The pimps would use them as lure women, like act like mothers. So they will target children who may have not had the greatest home life and make them feel safe and secure, because children feel safe with moms, with women, with females. So they tend to gravitate towards them a little bit more. And so they build trust that way. And so, they can be women. They can be men. They can be teenage boys, teenage girls. Who are luring younger or other victims into this life. They've come so far, and it's taken all these twists and turns in the world of pimps or perpetrators, and how they start to recruit their victims. So it does not have to be men at all. It's a scary thought, though, right? When you think about it.
Yes, it is.
How does a female...
Well, and especially because you said that part about the boyfriending. So it would be this younger mm-hmm. male in his role, and he's going to be boyfriending the younger female.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like, because you said around someone around their age and that kind of a thing. Okay.
Yeah. So they do it from like a 17-year-old would probably do it to like a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old. And believe me, that sounds disgusting, but it happens often. And they boyfriend them, and they make them feel comfortable, and they lavish them. And then the next conversation, it could be days, it could be weeks, it could be months. But the next conversation is, well, if you loved me, you would do this. If you loved me, you would have sex with my friends. And they're not his friends. They're people that are paying him because he works for a higher power. And that's kind of how it works.
Okay. Okay. So that is like, I just really, really, really appreciate you being here, Kat, and sharing all this and bringing in this awareness and how people can help. And because I too am really feeling like we got to have the conversation. We can't keep this like a hidden secret, right? Even though it's not comfortable to talk about, and some people may not like that I am putting this on my podcast, I feel like it's too important to keep a hidden secret and to keep to ourselves. And if we can do anything, and so we have the numbers, and I'm going to put them in the show notes also where the numbers are. And then, I'm not sure how else we can share, but whatever in the show notes, whatever I can get.
I will give you some great resources, some great websites. And I just want to say this one last thing, Debbie. The only way we're going to be able to start combating this is the more we talk about it, as much as it might be taboo. I do appreciate you bringing this to light on today's episode for all of your listeners, because it is very strong, and not very many people want to hear about it. And I know it's uncomfortable, but you're doing an amazing thing by highlighting human trafficking. So I want to say thank you to you. It's a big deal.
Okay. Thanks. I really appreciate it. And I am, because I really did everything I could when I was flying to be on awareness and pay attention and that kind of stuff. And so I just knew I needed to do this. However, whatever, I just feel like it's too important to leave hidden. So I appreciate all of you that are choosing to listen and staying with the episode today so you can have this knowledge, so you can also be a part of helping to at least bring up the conversation, let it take away the stigmatization, be a part of having this not be so taboo, because it's a reality of what is taking place in our world. And it is not one of those conversations of if we don't talk about it, it will go away. It is going to stay. And so we need to start doing our part in trying our best to make it go away. And having a conversation about it is how we're going to do our part in making it go away. All right. Thank you so much, Kat, for being here. It's been an awesome conversation. I have learned so much.
Thank you so much, Debbie.
Thank you so much for listening to Exit the Drinking Life podcast. I hope this episode has helped you move away from drinking shame and blame and instead into confidence and full belief that the life you desire is within your reach. You are not alone. I have been exactly where you are right now. If you have enjoyed this episode, please take a second to hit the follow button so you never miss a future episode. And leave a review to help me reach more listeners just like you, looking to break away from the toxic cycle of drinking and discover a healthier approach that leads to a life full of abundance and happiness. If you want to take what you've learned here to the next level, head over to jumpseatcoaching.com for more resources and tools. See you back here on the next episode.